We are recording.
Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
Excellent. Thank you very much. So today is Thursday, June 28th. It is officially 6:05. We call our meeting to order. Thank you all for coming, first and foremost. We appreciate it. I must say, in 2 years, most people I may have seen all together, so which is good. It's excellent. And I'm appreciative. Thank you very much for your attendance. So we'll begin with a call to order and a roll call. We'll start from my left and work our way around the table.
Zeke Allenson.
Chanda Gilmore.
Megan Newberry.
Jed Donahue.
Dwayne Sims.
Michael Riley.
Courtney Lawton.
Sarah Britt.
Courtney Fox.
And we have Angela Angini on the phone.
Excellent. All right. So I want to, again, thank you all for coming. I just traditionally like to start meetings. If you've been to any of my meetings, I like to start with a few comments, set the tone, make sure we take care of any other housekeeping matters as well. So as you can see, anyone not have an agenda? Excellent. So I believe everyone does. You'll see we'll leave with our public comment section for today's meeting, this evening's meeting. As we do that, I'm reminded for not only our board members, but obviously all of our speakers alike, very important housekeeping matters I want to make sure I address with everyone. All right. Those are obviously, first and foremost, we need to be cognizant. You mind turning that all the way down? Thank you. Keep in mind that this is a public meeting, obviously, and we are being recorded. As well, the comments and the entire meeting will be posted and available online as well. So keep that in mind. I like to make sure everyone's aware of that. As such, it is very important and it's pertinent not only for us as a board, but obviously for any guests, public or otherwise, that we understand that specific comments around specific personnel, students, disciplinary matters do not apply in this particular forum. What we do request that you do is if you have something with respect to those buckets, right? Again, specificity is the operative word here, that you speak with our administration. You can do that after today's meeting. I'm sure Courtney will make herself available. As well, you can also make an appointment at any given time, not only with our administration, but of course, if you feel the need, I'd like to make myself, avail myself to you as well, all right? Very important around that. Housekeeping around public comment. Again, this is the most folks we've had in some time, so I think it's appropriate that we mention that. Many of you have reached out to us via email. Our secretary, Chanda Gilmore, has brought them to my attention over the course of time. So keep in mind, I think I'm pretty certain that she relayed this information already, but just to reiterate as we kick off, it is 3 minutes per person. I think that's appropriate given the situation. Of course, we don't have a formal, in air quotes here, timekeeper. So I'll serve as that timekeeper, okay? Very gently raise my hand at 2 minutes, if that's fair enough, just so you understand you have an additional 60 seconds to really wrap up whatever thoughts you might have. Obviously, we want to try to keep that moving as long, as well as possible. Mrs. Gilmore, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe we have a good number of, of public comments this evening. So obviously, being respectful of other people's time and, of course, the rest of the board business that needs to be done. You'll see my hand go up in 2 minutes and then, if necessary, a reminder at 3, okay? Let's see. Of course, we always try to promote that if you do have a question or comment, obviously anyone, and let me be really explicitly clear about that, right? Anyone who would like to have a public comment at any of our board meetings are you beyond welcome, right? It's not only just welcome, it's your right to do so. We are a public entity, so you need to keep that in mind as well. So I want to put that out there for the record. Should you be discouraged, feel discouraged, whatever the case may be, don't hesitate to reach out to me. We'll make sure that we address that. I want to be very clear, the purpose of public comment is to be heard, and we want your voices to be heard, and we encourage that. So very important that we understand that and state that for the record as well. I know we have some folks who signed up already, and I believe we may have had at least one other person who signed up here on site. So again, you'll see that. Actually, if you look at your agenda, there's more to come from me with respect to public comment as well, a little later on in our agenda. So I'll address that at that due time. All right? Ms. Gilmore, I'll turn it over to our secretary. Mrs. Gilmore, we'll go through our list that we have recorded for public comment, and we'll begin now.
And just for the record, I'm going to make an over
overwhelming apology for calling names. I am so sorry. If I butcher your last name, it is not on purpose. I am just horrible in pronouncing names correctly. So I ask that you forgive me, and if you want to state what your proper name is, please do so. So first we have Mary Marsalik.
Luke.
Luke?
Really close.
It's close.
Absolutely. So Mary Marsalik, I've had two kids here. I currently have one. And I know I speak for many parents when I say that we came in together and invested a great deal of time, energy, and faith into this school. In the first 2 years, especially since I was in here even before the school started with the silent auction for the library, and before I started my clinical rotations, I think I may have put more hours into the school building than my kids have. And the first point I wanted to address is I don't understand why it's such a process to speak at the board meetings. The document to even explain the process is like I bookmarked it, because it's even having found it before, it's like, where did I find that again? And then nobody's email addresses are on the board to even reach out and contact anybody. It's an email that goes directly to the administration of the school for a request to address the board, which doesn't also make sense to me. And I think that if we want parents' involvement, which we always say that, you know, many hands make light work, we want the parents in here doing all these volunteer activities, but that goes both ways, that we also need to have a voice in shaping the school. And it is our responsibility to speak up when we see issues that concern us. I'm sorry, I hate public speaking, just for the record. I think a few of us have that problem tonight.
You're doing great.
Being a small school, we lack the checks and balances that the structures of a larger school automatically have built in. And I am here tonight to implore the board to play a more active role in that. I think that the board should take a more active role in mediating concerns between the staff and administration. I think that the board should be doing exit interviews to evaluate why we're losing staff when we lose them, and do an annual survey to check the climate of the employees here and make sure that these people that we're trusting our children with also feel valued and heard. I know that our PTO, all of our money, the PTO raises, goes into sending these teachers for extra training to develop their skills, and I don't know why we're spending all that money if we're not then gonna put extra effort into making sure we retain that investment and we make sure that we value the training we're giving them and give them a voice in developing the school too.
Excellent. Thank you, Mary. Appreciate that. So Gilmore?
Anna
Stepik. Thank you very much, Chanda. Good evening. First, I'd like to thank the board for granting so many parents time to speak this evening. My daughter has been attending FSMA for 2 years now. I'm a very active parent volunteer. I'm in the school almost on a daily basis. Our lives have been touched greatly by the nursing program and the food services program. I help with the food program on an as-needed basis. It's on our family calendar for me to check the lunchroom on Tuesday and Thursdays. Often volunteers forget to bring things back over from Building 920. Coolers and carts are sometimes left when I check the lunchroom. Sometimes the coolers aren't cleaned out, and if that happens, milk has to be thrown away. It all depends on the day. For most parts, volunteers are doing an absolute amazing job. This program is a matter of conversation at every executive PTO monthly meeting. It is exasperating for the volunteers trying to execute the program on a daily basis. It has been stated that there are no safety concerns. That is simply untrue. Our daughter has a severe nut allergy, and we will not allow her to order lunch because of the current system in place. When you have a volunteer workforce, they cannot be held accountable in the same manner as employees. I have seen, as have others, the main nurse literally run the halls with alias lunches to go and replace lunches that have been delivered incorrectly by volunteers. It would be a much different if there was an actual lunch services manager who could be held accountable for the entire program. The current system is a liability. We have had a relationship with the lower school nurse because of our daughter's severe allergies. She has been a champion for not just our daughter, but for the safety of all children at FSMA, and is a shining example for what all nurses should aspire to be when straddling a difficult position of nursing and working in the educational system. I understand that somehow it was written in the renewal that the nurse would handle all the lunch responsibilities. I regret that as a parent, I did not take a greater look at how that renewal was written. My husband and I were concerned that the renewal would be passed, as he was present and commented during the renewal process. I blindly trusted that the board had done their due diligence, that all safety measures for school growth had been accounted for in the renewal process. Having said that, I understand that the given state ratio is one nurse per 750. That is when the nurse is only handling nursing responsibilities and is on one campus. Also, most school ratios are 1 to 426, that stating that 1 in 344 is ideal, and that is when there are no other duties involved and one building, not taking into account crossing a busy street. Furthermore, when has FSMA ever held itself to a bare minimum standard? We want to do what is best for our children. We have always striven to break barriers and to do the absolute best. I ask you to first seek immediate action to the current situation. This could be as simple as hiring additional nursing staff, perhaps an LPN, to stay in compliance with how the renewal was written. This person could oversee the food program. This could be temporary while you seek to amend the current renewal. Being a Delaware native and having served on several boards in the Wilmington area, I know what you have before you. You must be the checks and balance for the school and for this administration. I implore you to be that more now than ever before.
Thank you, Mrs. Stubbe.
And I do have an information sheet for the facts that I stated, if anyone would wish to see it.
Thank you again, Mrs. Stubbe. Appreciate it.
Melissa Doolin?
I don't have anything written out. I'm just kind of sure. I am the mother of an upcoming fourth grader and an incoming kindergartner. I've been here since the beginning. I've helped out with the library and with fundraising. And I've helped out with being on the fundraising committee. What else do we do? Co-communicator. So I've been pretty active in the school, and I've seen such wonderful growth. I also work as a contractor, so I also work in other charter schools. And I've seen both sides, public school, charter schools. I've seen what growth can do. I've seen how unions can help in public schools. I know that there isn't a union here. There's some issues with staff retention here. And we have some really great staff members, and there's so many hats they have on. And I'm just really worried about how many hats can they wear? I mean, seriously, they provide so much for our children. I just don't want them to be stretched out so thinly. I'm also concerned about special education here in this school. We only have two special ed teachers. We're on our third ED. I don't even know how many kids we have now. Is it 500 and something? So 10%, according to the DOE website, is have IEPs. That comes out to about 25 kids per special ed teacher. I mean, that's a lot. They have to implement IEPs, they have to write IEPs, they have to collect data, they have to attend IEP meetings. That's a lot. And they have to go into the classroom to make sure that things are being implemented in the individualized education plans in the classroom. So those are my main concerns. I'm also concerned about support staff, making sure that we have some other structures or other staff members that can support the teachers that are here with kids that might have a behavior intervention plan, kids that might have 504s and just need modifications, maybe checking on those things, but some other support staff to deal with some of our kids that might need counseling. I mean, we have some needy children, some kids that are more complex than other children, that have really different learning styles, and I just want to make sure that all of our children, as different as they are, are getting the support that they need here. I know that lots of families have left because they didn't get the support that they needed here, and I really want to see that here at our school.
Melissa, I apologize. I feel like I was probably to butcher your last name as well. So forgive me. I was just going to say, Melissa, thank you very much for your time. And if you don't mind correcting me, I'd appreciate it.
Dooley.
Dooley. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
And for the record, I do want to add that Aubrey Nance Phillips has joined our meeting.
Thank you, Chairman.
Next, we have Alfred Stepik.
Stepik, yes, thank you. Good evening.
Good evening.
It's great to see so many people here. There must be something going on. Anyway, first and foremost, I'd like to say that my wife and I love the school and understand that many involved have put in numerous hours and blood, sweat, and tears to get the school, one, up and going and running. And not only that, but to get it chartered for another 5. So that's very impressive, and we thank you for that. Unfortunately, we don't come to board meetings typically to be a great cheerleader, but we come to recognize and solve problems. the first thing I'd like to discuss is safety and security. I know that a meeting is coming soon with Department of Homeland Security, and giving our current national climate, the safety and security of our children is of utmost importance to me. So I'm very interested in to know what happens with that meeting. The second thing I want to mention is to touch on some things that are also going to come up tonight is the whole school nurse lunch program. It has affected the safety and security of our kids. On the second to last day of school, our daughter was sick, and she waited in the hallway for quite some time waiting for a school nurse who was unavailable. A parent who happened to be subbing that day recognized her in the hallway, sent her back to her class, and then came to get her later when the school nurse came back. To note, our daughter was then sent back to class, and as she exited the school, she vomited out here on the sidewalk. So the ball was dropped on that particular day. So I ask that we find some way to get this particular situation resolved. One of the things I'd also like to bring up is the conduct of the board. I've noticed a few things to me that are sketchy at best. At the last board meeting I attended, I literally witnessed a board member bring up a subject to have another board member shut it down and mention that they would like to discuss that in private at another time. This happens to be a public forum. It also happens to be a school funded by public tax dollars. Please don't give yourself the notion that you are unethical on any means. It is only going to hurt the school. Please don't become a Penn State or a Michigan State. And lastly, in regards to public comments, the need to get your name on a list in order to make a public comment for a school funded by public dollars also seems a little bit sketchy. Anyone on the street should be able to walk in this door to public board meeting and make a comment at any time. Thank you.
Thank you, Alfred. Appreciate your comment.
Tara Weaver.
Sort of.
And we have a proxy for Tara.
Yes, I'm Stephanie Orr. I have one child that continues to attend FSMA. And in February, we removed our younger child because he has dyslexia and he didn't meet our learning profile. He wasn't giving him the needs met.
Forgive me just a moment. I'm sorry. The name, do we capture the proxy name?
Stephanie Orr.
Orr? O-R-R?
Correct.
Excellent. Thank you very much, yes. Stephanie. Appreciate that. Please pardon the interruption.
So currently we have one student here. So I'm going to read this just as it would be spoken by Tara. I have had the privilege to be one of two school nurses at FSMA. I, however, have been the only nurse to stay, resigning at the end of my 4th year. Every other nurse has left for varying issues. FSMA will say it's because they're employed part-time, but food service and lack of respect within the nursing position is a large albatross for the healthcare professionals. In total, 6 nurses have left. I being the only one that stayed. The food management fell to me. My dedication was also my trepidation. With 200 some students, it was manageable, not ideal, but I understood that getting the school up and running and the passion behind it. I was very misled in my interview process regarding the food and the significance I would play in it. This year, I have reached out to top administration numerous times, being overwhelmed and stating this is not appropriate with our growth. Nursing liability, my license, and safety. At 550 plus students, my medical needs increased. Training yet another nurse, along with increased food service demands, was not ethically sound or safe in my experience. This was expressed with a request for a better managed system. I also appealed to have my contract reflect that of a nurse's. The current contract does not allow me to address unsafe practices, and refusal to do so was not supported by my administration. I wanted responsibilities clearly outlined for food service. I was forced to agree with the current conditions or forced to resign. I will let you know when I hear from the Board of Nursing on that rule. I'm advocating for my profession and my students. I have stayed at FSMA because of my love for the students, families, and staff. I can truly say my career is my heart, and at FSMA it was full. I urge you, Board, to look closer at what you're asking of your nurses and staff. Look closer to the Nursing Care Act if you're writing nursing contracts. Consider applying attention and asking questions for the poor delegation of these tasks. FSMA receives funding for proper food service managed. Use it. If the board is choosing not to consider hearing this concern because top administration will not address it, then we'll ask you to look closer at your check and balance responsibility. You vote on the policies we should have in place, such as nurses for the summer camps and extended school. I'm throwing this in as a concern I've also addressed with top administration the last two summers. Last year's efforts for not allowing a nurse was heedless. This is a measure that the board should have voted policy on and addressed. Confer with people that have insight. Top administrators may defer and say that a 1 to 750 ratio is prudent with two nurses. We should be able to do both food and healthcare. But as nurses, we are governed by the Nursing Care Act to provide healthcare under scope and practice. That is what we are licensed to do, not food to this extent. Frankly, this is negligence. Simply put, I cannot participate. My name is to this. My integrity is in this. I have an email from a staff member concerned with allergy meal directed to administration, but I understand it was communicated to staff that there were no recorded data suggested safety concerns. I find myself puzzled and nervous by this misleading. I am not sure that feedback has been given to the board, but I can say that this creates unnecessary work for the teachers in the classroom. Teachers should be focusing on education. This is as much as conflict as unnecessary work for teachers. So to be clear, this is my feedback. It is not working well.
Thank you, Ms. Ewan. And thank you, Tara Weaver, as well.
Yes.
Thank you.
And I wanted to note the handout that I gave to the board was provided by Tara Weaver.
Thank you. Chair Gilmore.
Next, we have Aaron Barthel.
My kids get mad if I don't correct people. They get called the wrong name.
I understand.
Hello, thank you for your time. My name is Erin Barthel. I've had the pleasure of getting to know many wonderful families over the course of the last 4 years. Another group at FSMA that holds a special place to me is the staff. The school wouldn't be what it is without all of these people, the students, the staff, and the parents. What happens between these walls is so unique and amazing. It's unlike anywhere else. Like yourself, we've devoted many hours to FSMA, inside and out of the building, for the betterment of our children and all the students who walk these halls. To many, it feels like a second home. I'm here tonight to discuss my concern regarding the turnover of staff at the school. To be honest, public speaking is the stuff of nightmares for me, and I'm only here because for the first time since the school opened, it feels necessary. Over the years, by my count, just over 30 staff members have come and gone. As far as statistics go, this may or may not be spot on with the national or Delaware attrition average, but that doesn't really matter. FSMA often boasts of breaking boundaries, not being content with doing things averagely. to its core, its essence of being the first public charter Montessori in Delaware, shows it's not willing to do what's always been done. We in turn ask the children here not to do what's always been done. When this amazing group collectively wants to do something, it gets accomplished every time. Whenever we are facing something that leaves the opinions of the staff, families, and administration divided, it suddenly becomes an issue of logistics, and is much more often it will fall by the wayside. I feel we have two main positions that appear to be difficult to maintain, the nursing position and the student support position. All of the nurses that have worked at the school over the course of 4 years have resigned. Every single nurse that's worked here has left. That says something to me. Regarding both these positions in particular, the staff is entrusted with one of the most sacred rules anyone can have, to be allowed to be one-on-one with an accepted practice with someone else's child. Just hiring for this role, administration is confirming their overwhelming trust in the staff member. If a person can be trusted at this level, then any input provided by an individual in that role, stating what they need to be successful in their role, and to limit any liability should be carefully and thoughtfully considered. If it's not, and they are a valuable employee, we will lose them to another facility and our FSMA family will suffer. My suggestion is an anonymous third-party survey written by the board, including an option to add any additional comments the staff feels they need to address, sent out twice within the school year, and spaced accordingly. The information could be shared with the board and the administration simultaneously. Without great staff, our students can't reach their full potential. Thank you again for your time.
That was Barthel.
Barthel. Yes.
Barthel.
Yep.
Thank you very much, Barthel. I really appreciate the time and the comment. Thank you.
Thank you. Mary Falkenberg.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak on behalf of my school. So I'm Mary Falkenberg. I'm one of the lead teachers in a second and third grade classroom here. And I'm very proud to be here tonight just to share some of my thoughts about our school. So prior to working at FSMA, I taught for 11 years at a local school district. And working all those years definitely helped guide my teaching career. However, I always felt something was missing there. So when I started to look around for new positions, I ended up at an open house here at FSMA for prospective teachers. And it was during that meeting that I knew I had to be a teacher here at FSMA. The administrators and staff told our prospective teachers about this wonderful school they were making that focused on teaching the whole child, creating a positive learning environment, utilizing community resources, and being part of a supportive teaching team. And it almost seemed too good to be true when I heard it, but I can assure you that all of that has been very true here. As I begin my third year here, I can honestly say I am happy and eager to be here. I think what sets FSMA apart from other schools is the fact that every decision that is made for our school stems from the question of what's best for our students. And time again, I've heard my administrators and colleagues making decisions, and each and every time, the child's needs are put first. Even when I attended our calendar committee, the first thing that was said when trying to figure out dates to us was that we need to think about what's best for our students, families, and staff. And this seems so logical, but it is not happening in other schools across the area. When our staff says they're putting the needs of other kids first, I see it as they follow through with it on their actions. I get really excited when someone asks me how school's going, because I get to tell them that I can teach kids in a way that best meets their individual needs, both academically and socially. I get to say how positive and caring the environment here is at FSMA, and it's unlike anything I've experienced in my 13 years of teaching. So much so that I'm sending my daughter here to begin kindergarten in August. And I know when I send my daughter here that she'll be safe, she'll be cared for both academically and emotionally. Working in any school is hard and requires people to wear many different hats to serve the needs of our students. But I would just like to say that I feel our staff and administrators here truly do support each other to make the great things happen. I feel very honored and privileged that I get to work here, and I look forward to staying here for many years and having all my children attend here. So thank you for listening.
Thank you, Maria. We appreciate your comment. Thank you. Secretary Doolin.
Next. Gina Castelli. And I know we, I think we have a proxy here for her.
She's sending an email.
She's
sending an email.
I did receive her email. I thought she was going to have a proxy here.
Okay. We'll just admit that to record.
Okay.
Okay. As part of a package for a minute to approve at the next meeting. But without a proxy, it cannot be read.
Okay. Then Jill Pyle.
Hi, I'm a 2-3 teacher here. I have been with FSNI since the beginning and was even helping get the school set up and run. So I just want to say that my experiences here have been predominantly positive. I am proud to work at this school, and I feel the sense of community that Courtney and Liz have encouraged every single day. I truly believe that we are profoundly contributing to each child's sense of well-being and their growth socially, emotionally, and academically. Are there things that I would like to change? Of course. I would love a state-of-the-art facility with vast open outdoor space. Also, I would like to not have to deal with meal tallying, but I know that there are budget restraints to everything. Having a Montessori school requires 2 teachers per classroom. This puts a large additional expense on our budget that most schools do not have. It is a necessary expense if you are going to be a true Montessori school. While we all want what is best for the school, we also have to be careful that we do not jump to conclusions about what is right or wrong without all of the facts first. I think that having a debate is good, but let's be open to listening to all the sides of the discussion, please. It is not a bad idea to gather data on what the expense would be to hire someone to handle all aspects of the food service and then make an informed decision on whether it is prudent in our budget or not. Right now, that cost is being spread among many of the staff members. It has been an FSMA philosophy to share the work. This philosophy is common in many schools. We strive to do right by the kids in our school while also staying fiscally sound. Thank you.
Thank you, Jill. For your comment. Appreciate that.
Next, Sarah Bateman. I think she has a proxy. Oh, thank you, Jill.
So Sarah said.
Just for the record. Mary Falkenberg will be speaking on behalf of, is that correct?
Yeah, for Sarah Bateman.
For Sarah Bateman, thank you.
So Sarah sent this note. FSMA is a hidden gem. From an employee perspective, I feel that FSMA has really supported us as teachers so that we can focus on taking care of and educating the children. Through the lens as a parent of a student at the school, I am truly thankful for the positive culture and educational opportunity that my child has access here each and every day.
Next, Cheryl Jones.
Thank you. My name is Cheryl Jones, and I have been a Montessori educator for 13 years. I'm currently a second and third grade teacher at First Aid Montessori Academy, and I just finished my 4th year here at FSMA. In 2013, I joined other committed volunteers who worked to make First Aid Montessori School become a reality. This is a new venture for the Wilmington community, and as an experienced Montessori teacher, I wanted to contribute to this school's success. And successful it was. There are now waiting lists in many of the grade levels as the surrounding community has realized how beneficial and successful Montessori education can be. I am proud to be a part of FSMA, as it has become a great place for children to experience Montessori education and a philosophy that includes respect for others and working together to solve problems positively. Here at FSMA, children also use beautiful materials, have inspiring teachers, and learn in a safe classroom community. Each week, I get to see children have aha moments as they learn new concepts in math, reading, writing, and science. Team members work together to ensure that the children are learning at their own pace, but being challenged when needed. I believe our team members and administrators guide and support the school to help us continue to grow and move in a positive direction. I continue to support FSMA and believe that this is a wonderful and safe place for children to be educated so that they can fall in love with learning. And I think it's also an amazing opportunity for all of the adults to support this wonderful and safe learning. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Cheryl. Appreciate you coming. So, Gilmore, do we have any others?
Yes, I'm going to be going down the sign-in list now. Becky.
Adelke.
Adelke, thank you. Do you have a...
I don't have a comment.
Okay. Shamba Donovan.
I think one thing I would like to reiterate is the process for making the board more accessible. I think the emails, I know two of you individually, but if you don't happen to know you, or it kind of, as we become bigger, I think more parents are less likely to happen to know a board member. If there can be a process for a way to contact the board members directly, and again, recognizing that you have legitimate privacy concerns that already span. I think maybe having Facebook announcements when there's a board meeting, which I've seen occasionally, to help get more people like this each time would be great. But at this time, I just want to put my comments kind of those structural.
Mr. Donovan, did you say? Mr. Donovan?
Yeah, D-O-N-O-V-A-N.
Thank you very much for your comments.
Thank you.
Erica Richardson?
No, I don't have a comment.
Okay.
Sorry, did I sign the wrong paper?
No. We just want to make sure that everybody had the opportunity. Lindsay Abrams?
No,
okay. Corey Lambert?
No.
And Mila Duckworth?
No, I just wanted to say, if Gina... Can I read what Gina, if she emailed it to the board?
I think you'd have to be designated beforehand to do so.
Did one of you get an email? And
I did receive Gina's email when she said she had a proxy, but she didn't need the proxy.
She didn't name the proxy specifically.
No. And we were with her. She had mentioned that she was going to ask Beth to speak, but then she realized that Beth wasn't going to be here tonight.
So. As we understand it now, the standard is that has to be stated up front. So I think it was for interest for all. We'll just record that to the record as her email
along
the rest of our minutes.
And that's
she said that she was going to
but she didn't name the proxy. Yeah.
You want me to ask that question of the...
No, I don't think we want to hold it.
She stated that Beth Carter was going to make her comment.
Pardon?
Beth Carter was to make the comment, but Beth is not here.
And Beth is not present.
No.
Yeah. So we'll move on.
And can I just clarify, you're referring to this is a state requirement.
That was under advisement, that's correct, but also under advisement as well. Because the whole point is right, public comment to be represented.
That is all.
Is that all
that
for public
all.
Comment?
Yes.
Excellent. All right,
I
signed
in, but I didn't ask, but I wanted to say something.
I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. I do apologize sincerely.
I actually wasn't planning on speaking, but since I can, I'm just going to say a few words.
Okay.
So one of my concerns largely is for children who have learning differences, whether it is an anxiety issue, a mood issue, a depression issue, ADHD. Largely for children who have learning differences, dyslexia across the board is not acknowledged in Delaware, but it's pretty apparent when a child does have dyslexia and the requirements that they need to learn. And so since kindergarten, I've been arguing with administration to give my younger son proper education, and he continued to fall further and further behind, despite OT, vision therapy, private tutoring that we were doing. So in February, when he continued to fall behind mathematically in his self-esteem, and he was coming home not feeling confident, not feeling supported, saying, I'm humiliated, I'm embarrassed, I'm not going to go on to second grade, mommy, I'm not doing the work. He was supposed to have sensory breaks. They were overlooked. We provided, as his parents, all of his sensory tools, but he often wasn't asked to go. We provided weekly OT for him. So he is now at the pilot school, and I have to say he is thriving. He entered there at about a 1.5, maybe 1.7-ish reading level, and he was in second grade. He finished yesterday, his last assessment. He finished at, if not slightly above, grade level mathematically, and he finished at a 2.7 grade level because he was getting the tools and resources that he needed to learn how to read with his dyslexia. Largely, he's competent. He started taking dance class. He now plays four square at the pool. He's more assertive. The growth that I've seen in my son is amazing. And I really have to say, FSMA was failing him largely. And that should never happen to a child, because the emotional toll it was taking on him, he would miss 1 to maybe 2, maybe 3 days of school because he was psychosomatic. He has stomach migraines, and he would get a headache and vomit before coming to school. That happened one time, the first week of him being at Pilot, and it has not happened since. So I'm hoping you hear me loud and clear and you can hear my passion, and that's just one of my children. My other son has different learning issues, and he is not being assisted in the way that I think he needs to be, and again, I'm continuously arguing with administration. I've been told that I know too much based on my profession. I understand there's some mutter that I'm a helicopter mom. I've been told that the administration rolls their eyes when I come in. So it doesn't feel welcoming to me at all. And I think I'm not the only one who feels that way when we have children that are not typical learners, that our comments, our support, our needling, our advocation for our children is not accepted.
Thank you, Sylvie, for your comment. We appreciate that. Is that a final public comment?
Yes.
Excellent. For anyone who may not have signed our form, or for that matter has felt compelled to come, I think given the number of comments, I counted 13. Is there anyone else that had a statement for us this evening?
I'd like to accept the handout.
Which Tara's? Well, we should have Tara.
Thank you.
Yeah, if you could share that.
I think we'll keep this one and circulate that as part of our package. Thank you. See?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Mr. Stebbins. Excellent. So I believe we all have the agenda on us as well. We're going to move to our next item on the agenda, and that would be the approval of our May 23rd board public minutes. Of course, the presumption is that we've all had an opportunity to read, review. Any questions, comments, concerns around those minutes? Should there be none, may I hear a motion to accept those minutes?
There was just one little thing.
Please, go ahead.
And the new business, I think it's a very small thing, but it should be Mariano Rivera 5K Foundation.
Mariano.
And then space, Rivera.
Oh, okay.
Okay. 5K. And I think Janine's last name is spelled inconsistently, too.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Forgive the pedantry.
So some couple of spelling corrections. Anything else noted? standard. May I hear a motion to approve those minutes?
So moved.
Judge Donahue, move to approve the public minutes for May 23rd session. A second, please.
I second.
Shonda Gilmore, seconding. Any objections? Abstentions? So moved. We have the approval of the May 23rd executive session minutes, again, in our board package that was delivered earlier. Presumably, we've all reviewed it. Any questions, comments, concerns around those minutes, including spelling? Okay, hearing none, may I hear a motion to accept?
Motion.
That'd be Mike Riley with the motion to accept. And a second?
Second.
Excellent. That would be Megan Newberry with the second. All those in favor, aye?
Aye.
Any objections? Abstentions? So moved. Excellent. Thank you very much. As we move through the agenda, we have our committee reports. I'll turn it over to our treasurer, Executive Treasurer Zeke Allison,
for
a report.
So, as of
the end of May. We're almost 92% of the way through the school year. We've brought in just shy of 100% of the total revenue we're expecting. We've gotten in 99.7% of the revenue that we projected. Expenses are at 84-85%, so as we always like to see, we are spending less than what we've budgeted at this time. That fluctuates throughout the year, obviously, for things like certain months that have three pay periods, but at this point we're at 85% of our budgeted expenditures. We're looking at a carryover at the end of the year of almost $600,000, $595,000. That does not include mandated 2% contingency that the state requires us to keep on hand. That's another $129,000. We also have enough money on top of that carryover to fully fund our summer pay reserve, which is $159,000 this year, which is the amount we have to set aside for any possible closure of the school down the road so that we can pay everybody through the summer, since the fiscal year stops on June 30th and people work until the beginning of the new year. There would otherwise be no money for them. We also have enough money to put another $25,000 into our building maintenance reserve, which we've been doing for the last 2 years, especially because taking on the new building across the street comes with additional concerns about parts of the building that are going to need that are, you know, subject to deferred maintenance. They're going to need to be fixed.
Zeke, if I can interject there, just as a point of clarification too, I think for all those two reserves, one's mandated, correct?
The 2% reserve is mandated by the state.
That's correct. And then the building maintenance reserve is a self-identified reserve for reasons stated, correct?
That's right. We put that in place ourselves.
I just wanted to make sure for a point of clarification.
I'm sorry. Are you talking about the summer pay reserve? Yeah.
That's correct. Summer pay reserve versus maintenance building reserve.
Right. The summer pay reserve, we understand that if you don't have your summer pay reserve, you will get noted on your fiscal performance framework. So I don't know, whether it's actually mandated somewhere, but that's what we're hearing from the Department of Education. So we need to have that. And that, of course, is in addition to that 2% reserve that the state requires.
That is state required. Excellent. Thank you.
So, we're going to have somewhere around $700,000 at the end of the year, some of which, as I just mentioned, is spoken for, but we'll be carrying over at least $595,000 into next year's budget.
You said at the end of the year, academic year or calendar year?
At the end of the fiscal year, okay. June 30th.
Okay.
Which we won't be reporting on until next month.
Okay.
Thank you, Zeke. We appreciate the report. Just as a matter of being diligent, that's not a voting item, but the question is here. I want to always like to open it up from transparency purposes from our board. Any questions, comments, or concerns around our treasurer's report or our finances?
The one thing that I would add is that we're in the process of doing the five-year budget. We started working on that at the Finance Committee last month. And that lump sum sounds delightful, and I think we all probably in our heads go where we could go with that money. When we look at the five-year plan, we continue to deficit spend for the next few years and tap into some of that. So it's a little bit misleading to think that that's extra money that is not accounted for over the next 3 years. Would that be a...
That is a fair statement. That is definitely accurate, that we are deficit spending. We have been deficit spending. The major renovations across the street are a significant financial obligation. And to meet those, as we've discussed, we will continue to be deficit spending. And it won't be for a few out years until we get the student population and the additional inflow of state funds before that will come back under control.
So that was planned.
Yes.
I think it was very important that we use language and give any context around that. When we say deficit spending, we're not talking about revenue versus expense deficit spending. Correct me if I'm wrong. We're talking about deficit spending as it pertains to the carryover reserves that we've been fortunate enough to carry over year over year. Is that accurate?
It's accurate that, yes, we're continuing to spend down our healthy surplus.
Surplus money, as opposed to
borrowing or going negative.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that clarification point. Anyone else have any questions?
So the surplus enabled FSMA to undertake the expansion and the renovations of the building without taking on debt, correct?
That's right.
Right, so we pretty carefully put money aside ahead of time, and now we're spending that out. And we'll continue to do that for the next few years.
Thank you.
Yeah. And at some point, we're going to want to replace that. It's almost like we're making a loan to ourselves.
Hence our development committee action.
Yes.
Excellent. Very good. Wonderful. Good discussion. I appreciate that. We'll continue to move through our agenda. Next.
You can make a vote on the narrative report.
Oh, yes.
Forgive me. Thank you very much. I appreciate that, Secretary Gilmore. So there was questions, comments. May I hear a motion to accept our treasurer's report and finance report for the month of May?
And we'll need to post the monthly report and narrative on the website like we do each month.
Correct. And that was so moved by board member Aubrey Nance Phillips. Do I hear a second?
I second.
Mr. Riley, thank you very much. We appreciate that. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any objections? Abstentions from voting? So moved. Excellent. And Secretary Gilmore, thank you very much for the reminder. Appreciate it. We'll move on to the Executive Committee report, and I'll report out on this. It's more of a statement as opposed to a report. So, personally, I've heard you loud and clear, our community, our larger community, around concerns around the ability and accessibility to the board, specific to the procedures to post and make a comment, for public comment specifically. So I want to be really clear, and I tried to do that at the outset, but I'll double down on that for everyone's own edification. You know, public comment is just that. It's an opportunity for the community at large, whether you are a parent or not, to come have your voice heard here with respect to this institution. So we're going to continue with that. There's been some concern raised even today, this evening, right, around the procedures in place. As I looked around, I did not find many procedures on some school sites. That stated, I also did some homework and found that even though they do not necessarily exist at many schools, there is no objection to having them. So I can tell you that what FSMA's intention was, and still is to have procedures to constitute order and efficiency in our board meetings. That's something that I stated at my very first board meeting as taking over the board chair, and we're going to continue down that route. As such, though, I think we'd be tone deaf as an institution, and personally so, if we did not listen and hear what you have to say. So as a result, what we've done and what we're undertaking now is a review of those procedures, okay? And as a result, what you will see, and I want to be clear today so that everyone is on the same page and there be no misunderstanding, we're going to take those procedures down as of now. Everyone is still continued to be promoted and welcome to come to our next few board meetings until those procedures go back up. And so I want to be clear, we're not taking them down so that you don't come. Mm-hmm. Taking them down for a review. It's about self-reflection, and we want to make sure that we are promoting, that the message is on point, that we are promoting to you that we want you to come, and voice your opinion. So you will see them go back up. We already started a review of those. As I mentioned, I've done some homework as well around that. So we want to make sure that not only are we being consistent across the board, but more importantly, I think as well, or as important, we want to make sure we're being efficient, we want to make sure that we're being productive, and we want to make sure that we're being orderly. And I think we can all agree on those points as well. So again, you'll see those come down fairly soon, and then you'll also see them go back up with post revisions that are done. So that's going to happen internally by executive committee, along with our administration and council as well.
Dwayne, I just have a good, yes. I just want to make sure I understand the. So I understand that there's a revision that's going to the board's going to do on the procedures. But in the interim, while
well,
they're
it may not, I want to be clear, it may not necessarily result in a revision. Okay. A review. That's correct.
That may or may not lead to a revision. Mm-hmm. But in the interim, while they're down, the process will be people. They don't have to submit in advance. People can just show up at the meeting and make comments.
That's correct. Okay. So the general. That's a very good question. Point of distinction. Thank you, Joe. So a very important meeting begins at 6. Anyone who shows up and signs up to participate in public comment prior to the start of our meeting, more than welcome public comment. It will still be the normal 3 minutes allotment.
Thank you.
My pleasure. Any other questions, concerns, or comments around the next step of action?
I just want to add yes. kind of two things with the public procedures for public comment. I think it's a great idea to also involve governance committee mm-hmm. in the review of the policy, and also note that for the next few months up until the November-December meeting, Megan Newberry will be taking over secretary duties while I am out. So, of course, any emails that I receive, I will forward on to Megan, who will then in turn bring it to the board. So I want to make that a public disclosure.
Excellent. Thank you. And we appreciate Megan stepping up to the table. Thank you very much. And duly noted with respect to comment around governance. Thank you very much, John. Any other questions? Excellent. So we'll move on to our next bulleted item on the agenda, and that's our head of school report. You see there are several updates there to be considered.
Let's see what I can do. It's making noise. That's good. I have the slides for you guys as well that people can see so they can talk to them. So I've been asked to give some updates on some different topics today. I think my order is a little bit different than the order in the agenda, so bear with me. My slides are going to be a little bit different. And my goal is really to make sure that you guys have the information that you're seeking. And as I talk through them, I'll also talk through some of our strengths and some of our areas where we definitely see some places to grow. Let's see what I can do here. Hey, Liz,
go back, and down.
Sit and talk through, like I said, what you guys have and give as many updates as I can, and feel free to ask away as I'm talking and I'll see what I can answer. So in terms of school safety, I wanted to provide a few different updates. So the first update is the DEMA School Safety Symposium, which is coming up in July. I put it out to the board. I know we have a board member attending, we have teachers attending, and staff members attending from our safety team this school safety symposium that's being led by DEMA. Workshops that people are attending at this school safety symposium are around the topics of planning and implementing a violent intruder drill in schools, conducting safety and hazard assessments, threat assessments for schools, developing a bomb threat plan, and a school reunification planning and recovery from an incident plan. So there are five topics that our attendees are spreading themselves around to gather as much information and bring it back to the team. After that symposium, the Department of Homeland Security asked us to wait until after the symposium to meet, to make sure that we had all of their information first. So they will be meeting with us in early August. And with them, we will be reviewing our safety binder. So one of the things that I mentioned, I think, at the last board meeting was that throughout the building, there are these red safety binders that have been created with the Department of Homeland Security and our staff. And as you can see, it's a pretty thick binder.
And what it does is it literally goes through every type of emergency that could happen and talks about proactive and reactive things to do. It gives, you know, sample reunification steps. It gives emergency operations for everything from, you know, any type of evacuations, but then it also talks about if there's an animal disturbance or if there's a bus accident, if there is some type of air pollution alert. There's a pandemic influenza. I mean, every kind of crisis that you could imagine happening, they have gone through kind of what the steps are in best practice to be able to do so that we have a resource right on staff that we, right on site that we use for that. We will be updating this with them and their guidance at that August meeting. So that's kind of the update on Department of Homeland Security and DEMA.
Courtney, just a question on that, those books. Are teachers aware of them, familiar with them?
So there's one on every floor. We've introduced them. I can't say that everybody at this point would say they know exactly where they are. It's on my list to make sure that everybody does know where they are. They're not necessarily meant for teachers to use. It's more your crisis team. So each member of my crisis team has access to one and knows where they are. And that team is the one who would really be going in and delegating the steps and the pieces to it. But I do think it's important that everybody knows that it exists as well. So we want to make sure we continue to convey that. I know we did the first few years. I can't say that we reminded everybody where it was last year. Again, area of growth, right? The other thing that's come up in the past few months is what's called a RAVE, or it's called the RAVE panic button. It's being offered free to schools. And we Liz is in the process of setting that up for our school. It's an app. And if I speak to this wrong, you can correct me. I'm going to defer to Liz on a couple questions throughout this presentation, so don't mind me when I do that. It's an app that allows us to immediately contact 911 and give an emergency. And what it would do is it would alert our staff immediately back with the information that they needed. So if we would hit that button and tell them that there was an intruder on the first floor, every member of the staff would get a message of what was going on and where it was that they would need to know. If it's an emergency that they would need to know about, right? So it allows us to communicate with staff directly and immediately all at one time in the case of emergencies so that we can best respond and react.
They get the message on their phone?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think I read about this in the newspaper that Sally's has it, and I think Red Clay, I think, is exploring it. So are you going to be investigating and reaching out to those schools to see how they use it?
Yeah, Liz has kind of just started that process.
Yeah, it's just starting for everybody. It's being funded for the state right now, so different schools are just starting to implement it.
Okay, thank you.
So the next piece, it says the City of Wilmington. So we've also been working with the City of Wilmington this summer to ensure that our surrounding neighborhood is as safe as it can be. So we worked with them to get our crosswalks all repainted, which sounds silly, but it's been a really important piece for us to make sure that that happens. We also asked them to repaint or to add lines on our sidewalk so that the kids know where to stop so that they're not going up to the edge of the curb. So now there's actual lines that they painted on our sidewalk to designate where to stop. And they put up bright yellow signs that have pedestrian crossing signs. So again, just more visibility for student safety in our neighborhoods. And then the last thing on here talks about the Society for the Prevention of Teen Suicide. So we were given two spots for members of our crisis team to attend this training by the state. So that occurred on Monday. They have put together an incredibly intense online training, very differently than they've ever used before. I went through the online training. It is much different than any of the online trainings that teachers have done before, and incredibly thorough. And then we will have teachers, like I said, two members of our team went down and were trained on a program to bring back for our teachers and train our teachers to be able to support students and families accordingly. So we are really developing some curriculum resources. We're putting together a parent information night, but really making sure that we are doing everything that we can around that area. I think at the onset, what I should have said about school safety is that it is an incredibly dynamic piece of the puzzle. It is constantly changing, and it's really important to us to be up to date and to be constantly kind of checking what we do and making sure that if there's something we need to change or do better, that we're doing that. And so our plans right now are just to continue to take the things that are going really well, but also figure out what we need to change and go with the most up-to-date and most current kind of suggestions and ideas that are out there. But it is an ever-changing piece of the puzzle that will look different every year, and there will always be pieces that need updating and changing as we move forward with school safety. Okay. All right, so shifting gears. And when I say shifting gears, I'm really going to shift gears. So I'm going to jump in a totally different direction. So one of the things that I was asked to present to is around student retention and enrollment. I don't think I can talk about enrollment without talking about student retention, so I want to start with retention, and I'm going to lead that right into enrollment, because I always give you guys an enrollment update in the summer, but like I said, you got to know if everybody's staying or leaving in order to know how many spaces we have to fill. So you'll see the three numbers that we have from the past 3 years that the state has collected data on us. I will be very honest, the number that is listed for this year will go down this summer. It always does over the summer fluctuate a little bit. We have people that move and don't tell us. We have people that make different choices. That number will go down. But it's trending pretty high for us right now. I reached out to the state today and asked what the averages were around student retention. Some of the department said, what's your number? And I said, 94.5 right now. And she said, I can tell you that's really high. She said, I don't have the averages in front of me. I'm going to work to get them to you, but I can tell you that that's a really high number. So just to give you some perspective, I wanted to have the actual averages for you, but I don't have those right now.
We could have those for our next month.
Yep. I will do my best to get those.
Thank you.
So knowing that we're keeping most of our kids, I'm going to break it down a little bit more and kind of dig in a little bit deeper to that. And again, my intent is to be really honest with the information that you're seeing and give a really clear picture of what's going on here. And so I tried to break this out into as many kind of pieces of the puzzle that I could. So this is entering next year. I've given you the data around students that are not returning, around new students and who have accepted, and also around the current waiting list. So when I look at this, obviously there's a huge strength in that our waiting list is still sitting at 488, even after we've accepted and filled positions. And that's even after people have, so if someone goes in and applies to multiple schools and gets in, they come off of our waiting list as well. So that's our active waiting list right now, even after the enrollment choice window has closed. When you look at not returning, to the best of my knowledge, I've given you the reasons for what I know around students not returning. What you'll see is the list of how many total are not returning at each grade level, and then in parentheses is students that we think are just returning to their district or private school. So we're talking about right now 10 students that we know who have told us that they are returning to their district or feeder school. When I look at this and look at areas of growth, I will tell you that 6th and 7th grade piece where we're losing 10 kids in that area, again, we're losing some of them to specialized programs, but it is definitely an area of growth for us. I think that we worked really hard to develop a transition program for our kids in the upper elementary moving into middle school and added some different components for them this year so that they would be ready for middle school. However, we were not able to retain as many as looking at this number. And so we're going to continue to look at that. I think there's also part of it's building trust for people when they can't see a program and can't touch it. It doesn't fully exist yet to its full capacity, so I'm hoping that as we move forward and it's more visible and you can see parts of it that number shifts as well, but it's something that we are definitely paying attention to. And then you'll see the total enrollment for next year, yes, 516.
Just a quick question around 7th grade.
Mm-hmm.
So I see we have, as you mentioned, 6 students not returning, 3 mm-hmm. fall into that latter category that you broke out, right?
Yep.
Of those 6, so how are we, can you give us some context around the total number of children right, that we actually have in that 7th grade bucket?
Yeah, so, what I should have done too is put a 0 for the 8th grade. Of our current 7th graders, right now they're all returning, so there should be a 0 in that last line as well. Mm-hmm. All of our current 7th graders are returning. The 6th graders moving up to 7th grader is about 52 to 56 kids. Is that what you'd say, Liz? Mm-hmm. It's right around, it's in the mid-50s leaving. Yes, and heading into 7th grade. Yep.
Thank you.
And we've always known that was one of our, it's a break point for kids, right? They finish that 3-year cycle, it's a place, but I want to make sure that we're doing what we can to make sure that kids are staying there as well.
Thank you. So just one follow-up on, so for those in that example, six kids are not returning, are we reaching out to the waiting list of 25? Are we hoping to fill those spots, or where are you on that?
Yeah, so we have, we've added four at that level, and that's about where we expected some attrition at 6, 7, 8. We actually have accounted for some attrition in fourth grade and on, actually, because we know that historically that's where
right.
we're going to lose a couple kids. So it actually is accounted for in our enrollment plan to lose a few kids. So that's why we've only accepted four new kids.
Courtney, do we know what specialized programs the students are going to, those four, and
yeah.
also the reasons for returning to feeder districts?
I have reached out to some of the people who have left to go back to their district of feeders. I have not received a response from anyone that I've reached out to just say if there's information that you think would be helpful for us, if there's any feedback. I have not received that. However, specialized programs are two right now that we have. Of those four kids, they're going to CAB or an IB type program.
CAB or what?
An IB type program, International Baccalaureate.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. So all of this kind of growth around kids has to, we've got to grow accordingly too. So I'm going to shift gears and kind of look at, in order to meet the needs of all of these kids, we've got to grow in terms of our staff as well. And what I think that you'll see in terms of our growth of the staff over time is that it's absolutely proportional to meet student needs, and it's based on, you'll see growth in all of the instructional areas and student-based areas. They pretty much double in size as we double in population moving into next year from the very beginning. That's a pretty straightforward correlation. The biggest growth that I think you'll see on here is actually our special ed team. So our special ed team started with two members the first year and grows to seven next year. Even last year, going up to 5.5 was another big jump. So it has grown more than doubled with the doubling enrollment. Last year was the first year we had an education diagnostician on staff, as well as our psychologist on staff. So we have added those pieces last year. Next year, our psychologist goes to full time, and we are adding another special ed teacher as well. To round out that team, so that's where that number seven comes from. So we will have three full-time special ed teachers. We have one part-time special ed teacher. We have a full-time speech person, a four-day-a-week psych person, student support. There's kind of a couple different people in there that make up that number. And then the other thing that I will say is that the two areas, as we talk about areas to consider, the two areas that have not reflected the same amount of growth is the admin and facilities. So as we look over time, those will be the areas that we're going to continue to look at to determine if there's more needs there. They do not grow proportionately with the number of kids.
Courtney, what's the difference between admin and office staff? What are the admin?
Admin is Liz and I.
Okay.
We've been here from the beginning. We're still here. and the office staff are our financial secretary, our operations staff, our front desk staff. There's been pretty good increase in that area as well. So with growth of teachers and with the growth of those units, I think it's a very natural connection to talking about staff retention and teacher retention. So I'm going to move into that piece. And this chart actually came right from the state in our renewal last year. The state only tracks teacher retention. And the state only provides data around teacher retention. So I have the numbers around that, but I'll give a little kind of update on the overall staff as well. You can see that our staff retention rate is actually the highest that it's ever been this year. Again, an area of strength. And I've jotted down reasons that I know of for what people are leaving and staying for. Again, that's what people have shared, and that's what's been reported out to the state in terms of reasons stated for leaving. You'll also see that our percentages compared to the state have been similar, but I expect this year that we're going to be over that, because that's been pretty steady over the past couple years. And you can see what that looks like for this year in terms of our teaching staff. As I mentioned, I'm going to acknowledge on the bottom that our staff retention rate for this year is 89%. We have not tracked that historically. I could look at last year to this year and pull it, and it's up from 85% last year. One of the areas to consider is as we move forward. So our strength is obviously, I think, a high teacher percentage retention rate. I think one of the areas that we want to continue to look at and evaluate is why those are not similar numbers, and if there's something that we can do to help those be consistent across the entire school.
Does the staff retention number include teachers in it, or is it a separate?
Yes, okay. So it's everybody. It's an overall number.
Do we have reasons for, I mean, you have stated reasons or students that you said you know of in terms of the faculty that have left, but for the staff, do you have any reasons?
Yeah, we have not collected that data. Like I said, this came from a state report,
okay.
So I was able to pull it. It's tricky because the state does not look at staff retention. They only look at teacher retention. So the data that we have available looks a little different. I think certainly we could go back and look at it and try to track it a little bit differently. One of the things that we had to do as a part of our renewal last year was a teacher retention strategy report. And there are about 8 to 10 strategies that we have started to put in place or that have been in place around retaining strong quality teachers, because I think that we would all sit here and say that that is the reason that our kids are doing amazing things at this school. So it is absolutely the number one to make sure that there are amazing people in every classroom. Okay. Questions around safety, enrollment, teacher staff updates. I will also say, kind of if I went back one and said all of these new positions that are coming out in year five, so we've added these positions. All of the positions have been either filled or in the process of being filled, except for the tech teacher position. All of the other positions have either offered or that we've gone through the interview process and are in the process of contacting references, but there's only one position that's still open right now, and that's the tech teacher position.
Courtney, I know you don't have this listed in the breakout, it's not listed, but I'm concerned about diversity.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to know whether or not any of those teachers that are coming up that we're able to put in, if we're considering any, because I mean, the diversity of the staff is
absolutely
no diversity.
Yeah.
And that is becoming an issue, I think, my kids in particular, and so is that being addressed at all?
I won't say that there is a clear plan to address it. I think that it's something that's on the radar of a lot of people. It's been brought to our attention this year that it is definitely a concern. I think that it's something that we need to start to put a committee around and some thoughts around about how to reach out differently. We've tried some strategies this year, so like anytime we had a job posting, it was sent to some local universities that have predominantly African-American populations in them. We're not getting any hits from that, zero. So that strategy is not helping us. I think I've been trying to read and look, because I know that the state is really talking about it right now. There's an article a couple weeks ago in the paper about a group that's trying to put this attention on it. So it's not an FSMA issue, it's a global issue, and my perspective on it is, while there's an immediate need for us to make sure our students tomorrow have some role models here, mm-hmm. I also want to figure out what we're doing to support our kids that are in school to go down the path of education, so that in 10 years they're coming back and want to work here, and I can. So I'm looking at it kind of in two different ways, and I'd love to get a team around that, really thinking about how we can do that better.
I would love to help out with that.
Fabulous.
And immediately to my mind, like internships. You may not be able to hire students, but students,
yeah,
have to do hours, and it would be a great opportunity for them to come and see a different type of classroom.
Absolutely. I also would like to figure out a way to get some more mentoring type programs in place where, children are exposed to different people that look different and come from different backgrounds and are successful in doing different things, or to be able to see some paths that they're on. I just think there's more we can do to expose kids to a variety of things.
And race and gender, too. There's not much gender diversity here either, and I think that's really important as well.
Yeah. I think I read the other day African-American men in teaching is 2%.
Black American men, boy graduation rates, right, are about the same.
I figure if we can grow some here, right? Mm-hmm. We've got some kids that could be incredible teachers one day. I think there's an ability for us to contribute to the long-term plan and think about an immediate fix for tomorrow, too. But yeah, I'd like to put a more concrete plan around it, so I'd love to work with you on that.
Okay.
All right. So I'm going to shift to food services. So I've been asked to give kind of an overview as to what the food services program looks like at FSMA. And some information around that. So I'm gonna give some information around that program. It's not been one that we've talked about in a long time. So I'm gonna speak to that. One of the things that is incredibly important to note is that the way that we run our food service program is rooted in Montessori, right? So we eat lunch in our classrooms, and we have our lunches catered in, which is different than anywhere else. I actually cannot find another school in Delaware that functions in the same way that we do. There are private schools that eat in the classroom, however, they do not have the same requirements that we do around food service and around providing meals. I reached out to the Charter School Network today and said, is there anybody else that is serving lunch in their classrooms? There isn't anybody. So we've had to create a program that's unique to our needs, and it's going to look different. And there's going to be different parts to it because we're doing it very differently. A couple kind of pieces of information that are out there. So the oversight of the food service program does fall under my job description. It always has, and it lives there. And I do have oversight of that food service program. The nursing staff are critical in that piece, and they serve as the direct liaisons to our food service provider. So our school food authority, our SFA, they are the direct liaisons. That was written in our charter before we opened. I was not on the committee that created that or wrote that, but it lives there, and that's what we've built our existing program off of. Again, some of the numbers that you've heard tonight is that the national recommendations for nurses are one per every 750 students. I have some data on that for you if anybody is interested in where that comes from. Our statistics more look like about one nurse for every 250 children. And at all times during the day, there's at least one nurse available, which is actually pretty unique because in most schools, you have a nurse that has to take a lunch, a nurse that has to take something, and there's a period of time where there is no one available. At FSMA, even if our nurse takes their lunch or if our nurse is helping with food services, there's always a second nurse available. So at any given moment, and our nurses have walkies on them, at any given moment, there is absolutely one nurse available, and most of the time, there are two nurses available. And one of the components to our program is that every year the lunch captains, the PTO, the nurses, the admin, kind of the key players in all of this, meet to reflect on the current practices and create some changes. So our most recent meeting was in February, and we kind of reshifted some of our responsibilities in response to some needs to make sure that that we were responding to what everybody needed in that program. So. February-ish time, we shifted a lot of our current procedures from our lower school nurse to our upper school nurse, and she took the lead role on food services for the last few months of the school year, excuse me. One of the reasons that we did that is that we were able to track traffic in the nurse's offices, and we found that there were periods of time that the upper school nurse didn't see students, so she was able to release from over there and come over here to work that piece, and so that allowed our lower school nurse to stay present in the nursing room at all times. And then for any of our kids that had an emergency, she was still available. So we were able to manage it that way. So we do kind of shift and change throughout the year as the needs are brought up and respond to what's going on. We actually just did our meeting, our end of the year meeting this week to start to do our reflections for next year. And again, made a bunch of recommendations around things that need to happen from as simple as our thermometers need new batteries, and we didn't know that, right? So we're not able to check the food coming in, so we have to replace our thermometers. But we also realized that we need to make sure that there is someone designated to be in our food prep room for 1 hour every day. So we did not have that designation before. And so right now we're looking at our current staffing to determine who that would be and what makes sense with the resources we already have to be able to do that and if that's possible. We also looked at the bags that need to be ordered and creating some new breakfast bins, but some specific recommendations that came from that team around operational needs and what needs to happen around that piece. I'm going to dig in a little deeper in just a minute so you can see what it looks like, but I want to kind of give up the other general piece of information that you need to know is that we contract out with the community education building for our food service program, and they serve as our school food authority. Their responsibilities as our school food authority are all of our meal planning and in accordance with federal regulations. All of the menu creation comes from them. All of the food preparation and the individual portioning comes from them. They deliver the food right to our prep room here, put it right into our warming stations. And then the other contract that we have is with a company called Meals Plus, and they manage all of our online ordering and balance and payment system. So there's two outside venues that really manage the production and the oversight that way, as well as the financial component to it. So that's off-site, on-site, and I'm going to defer to a couple of the people that are here that run these different buckets in just a second, if that's okay. So on-site, like I said, the school food authority, the contract oversight, which includes, you know, making sure the menu is appropriate, the delivery, the any federal regulations, and all comes under me. So I do the contract negotiations for that. I've brought teams with me, but I do the final oversight of that. We do that once a year in the summer. We review the contract and resubmit it. The meal benefit supervision falls under Liz. Liz, do you want to give a snapshot of what that means?
Sure. So I process all the meal benefit forms. That's if anybody's applying for free or reduced lunch and breakfast. That comes through me. I determine if a family would qualify for that. It's followed up by two other sets of eyes that check that off as well, and then send out the communications back and forth with families about whether or not they qualify. For the
next so that is an incredibly confidential piece of the puzzle that only a very few number of administrative people can know, so that's why it falls under Liz, myself, and the nurse are the three that sign off. Liz processes them all, and then we double check her to make sure it's all appropriate.
And for the record, just Liz, our educational director.
Thank you. The menu distribution and processing, so all those fun menus that you get coming home. So the menus are created off-site. However, once they're sent to school, our upper school nurse and teachers are really responsible for processing those. Becky, you want to talk to that at all and what you do with that?
Sure. Monthly we receive the menus from CED. They're sent to the office staff and produced for the teachers, sent home to the students, and the menus come in completed. They're tallied by the teachers and then given to the upper school nurse, which is myself. I get a tally for the whole school and send that to CED to order the meals for the day on a weekly basis. And after that's complete, on a daily basis, I will also check in meals, make sure that we have the accurate number, and as well as children who have forgotten lunches or last minute orders, that's communicated to the CEB by myself as well. And so we do have enough meals for the children who need them. And checking the meals, make sure the children who have allergies have a special meal that's prepared for them and is present. That's that part of it. Mm-hmm.
As again, I said, we shifted in about February, March, due to kind of looking at the traffic in the nurse's office to determine who best utilizing that piece, doing that piece would work. We also are required to attend some food service meetings. I've attended some. Some of our nurses have attended some, and we'll be determining for next year who makes the best sense to attend those as well. All of the balance processing happens from our finance secretary, and then she submits it to me, and I put out the final information. And then we also participate in a backpack program for students who might not have as much access to food on the weekends. We send them home with food on Fridays. So our lower school nurse coordinates with the Food Bank of Delaware, and backpacks of food are brought in and sent home with kids that, if anybody identifies a student that we think might need that, we just automatically send them home with food to make sure that they're getting that. So that's kind of like the big picture. If I kind of bring it down to a day, because I don't know, I feel like this is the only way to kind of think through what this really looks like to have a clear picture of it. And I'm going to walk you through a day of what that looks like in terms of the different pieces. So before school starts, teachers, and I should say, Corey, as the head of the parent volunteers, feel free to jump in here, and Liz and Becky too, anywhere that you have more information on this one. So before school starts, The teachers pick up their breakfasts in the food prep room, and kids eat breakfast in the classrooms. That happens in the first chunk of the day. Then you get to this check-in of the food delivery. So around 10 o'clock, the food is all delivered here, and Becky checks it in, and she started to talk a little bit about kind of how you do that. Yeah, you can go on about it if you want or not.
Okay, well, we have certain children who have allergies, so we have to be sure that meals are prepared according to their requirements there to avoid any type of allergens. So we have to ensure that each child who has an allergy, who orders a meal, has a meal that's prepared and labeled for them. And then the other part of it is to check the number of hot meals and cold meals that we receive daily to be sure that the number's correct. And like I said, also children who have forgotten their lunches and last minute additions to the number for the day, have to ensure that we've got a meal for those as well.
So Becky mentioned allergy supervision. I know that piece came up earlier. That was one of the pieces that came up in our reflection meeting as some areas to tighten and to work with our SFA around some different systems that we can put in place to tighten that up. We've realized a couple kind of gaps in the communication that we want to address. So it is a piece that we're looking at some steps to ensure that even more.
Is that for implementation next school year, upcoming school
year? Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the food comes in, Becky counts it all, we ordered 75 hot lunches, we've got 75 hot lunches, we ordered 10 cold lunches, we got 10 cold lunches, we get about 80 to 100 lunches a day, Becky, would you say? Yeah. That they account for. Once that happens, then we have this incredible team of parent volunteers who swoop in and get everybody what they need. So Corey, I'm going to let you speak to that. Corey's the head of the lunch captain program for our PTO. So she organizes the lunch captain.
Yeah, so that bigger piece is more kind of heavy at the beginning of the year, recruiting volunteers and scheduling everybody to make sure that we do have the 2 to 3 parents there every day to get lunches to the kids. On a daily basis, I've been coming once a week since the school opened, and it's definitely evolved over time as the school grows and another building and all that, but the gist is the same. The volunteers are there to sort the food that has been checked in by the nurse into the different classrooms and floors. So for room 2, they get 2 hot lunches and 3 cold lunches and 2 chocolate milks and 3 plain milks and their fruit. And so that goes into their bin, and we make sure that it gets to that room, that floor, at their designated lunchtime. We do that for all the floors in both buildings. Part of that is making sure that the right allergies go to the right classrooms. They are all individually labeled. Otherwise, it's really just a matter of sticking to the schedule and getting it delivered. And then also, you know, if there's some downtime in there or after it's done, preparing the breakfasts for the next day and cleaning up, going back to retrieve all the bins and trays and get everything back into the lunchroom to have it ready for the next day. So it's certainly a work in progress, like everything else. Like Courtney said, we meet every year, a couple times a year, to make sure that things are moving in the right direction and we're accommodating the changes as we get.
So Corey, on behalf of the board, I want to thank you.
Yes.
I think it's appropriate, right? And your entire volunteer staff, right? I'm certain it's clearly a significant time commitment, you know, anything else that we do on a volunteer basis. I do want to ask a question around that implementation that you just described, and that is specific to, is there any control checkpoint in place or an opportunity even for growth around an existing control checkpoint upon delivery to the classroom? In other words, the sorting has been done by Becky and team, right? Rebecca and team. And we've delivered it with our lunch captains, right, to the classroom. Part of that sorting has been done is around allergens, as we stated. However, how do we ensure, so we've now ensured that it's gotten to the right classroom. Is there anything around making sure it gets to the right child?
Maybe one of the teachers could, because they're the ones that didn't deliver it.
Each kid, real quick, we'll pass it on to a teacher, but each kid does have their own code name so that it's kept anonymous. So on each label for each lunch that has an allergen is the child's code name and the room number. So as far as we're concerned, it's going to the right place. And there's not more than 1 or 2 per classroom at the most. So I think it's pretty easy for it to check and make sure it's going to the right kid.
So it's at the teacher level at that point? Does the child know their code name as well?
Yes.
They do.
Yes,
okay.
But all the lunches, we lay them out in my classroom anyway. Mm-hmm. Lay them all out, and then you can clearly see the ones that have a label. And
sure.
I give the allergy ones usually to those kids.
And then do you check, like, whoever's
first.
Ordered hot is getting hot?
Yeah, you have. We make our own list of who ordered what.
And that's signed off on, I would imagine, at some point.
Well, I check them off as I hand them
as
to those
hand.
Kids, and then we have to go on the computer and enter the lunches for those kids.
So the next
so
thing up there talks about the point of sale. Sorry, Neil. Did you want to finish?
Yeah, I'm done.
Sorry. The next thing talks about point of sale. Point of sale has to happen where a child receives their lunch. So the teachers who distribute the lunch have to be the ones who then go onto the computer and say, yes, I gave this child this lunch. So the teachers have to give the lunches, and then they have to report
Trust
that as well.
Yep.
We've been audited on that process, and that's been very clearly articulated to us that they have to be the point people on that because they eat lunch in the classrooms. Again, we're audited on this, and I will tell you, like, they came in and were trying to figure out how to even audit us because the procedures are so different here than they are anywhere else.
Who does the audit?
But we have clearly passed all of our audits. I'm sorry, what?
Who does the audit?
The state, the school nutrition department.
Any findings that we should be aware of?
There were not any that's one that was completely clean. And I can go back and double check that and pull that report for you.
Thank you.
Yep.
And again, thank you both, all of you, Rebecca, Corey, Jill.
I have a question. So, because one of the concerns I'm hearing also is the availability of the nurse during the day, particularly during the times, I would say, when the food is being delivered. So, and looking at this chart and ensuring, so both nurses are available during that time of lunch should there be an issue. It's not, are they, I should say, and
yeah.
Becky or anybody, please speak to this, are available during that time that they're not actually delivering food and all that?
I'll say from my perspective that we would only ask if there was some discrepancy, only bother the nurse if there was some discrepancy in the number of, like if we were expecting 60 lunches and there's only 55 there, then we would ask them to call back to see if we can order more. There's really not been any other issue during the lunch delivery hour and a half where a nurse is needed.
Becky, do you want to speak to that at all?
Yes. Being the upper school nurse, I'm available on the walkie at all times as well as the lower school nurse. And during the time that I would come to the lower school to prepare the lunches, I've had maybe a couple of dozen times that they've actually had to reach me, not for emergency situations, but had to reach me and I've been able to, back and forth between the two buildings, and we've never had an issue that wasn't handleable. I mean, if we had children that needed to be seen right away, either I would go and see them or they would come over to the building where I was. So with the two of us available.
So I thank you for that. I don't know how to phrase this. It seems like I'm hearing, I don't know how to reconcile what I'm hearing, because I've heard parents who've been very generous with their time to come talk, and I'm hearing a different perspective. So I'm not saying, I just don't know, how can we account for like a scenario where my child was sitting there waiting outside for and the nurse wasn't there. I mean, I'm not trying to sort of attack you or attack anyone. I'm just trying to sort of make sense of the information I'm getting. It seems to be kind of, so I don't know who can. Does it make sense what I'm asking? Can you imagine a scenario how that's something that could have happened? And
perhaps if I were in the lower school doing the lunches and there was a child that were to come to my office in the upper school, there would be a time that they might have to wait for me to come back across the street or perhaps be brought over by either a teacher or one of the front office staff. Other than that, I don't have a specific answer to that. I don't have the specific example of, there was a situation.
I guess the larger question is, it's an implementation question that you're talking about, just something to...
I mean, there have been times when I've been the only nurse, and, if the other nurse was out sick, but then I'm still available by walking.
Again, my interest is not to attack you or anyone else. It's just sort of, in interest of closing gaps and things like that. How do we, based on the information we've gotten tonight, it's not, but as your team looks at this, how can we close those gaps?
And I think one of the things that we talked about, too, is training our kids to tell us when they go somewhere and somebody's not there, regardless of who it is, right? If they go to, if they stop to come to my office and I'm not available, when they go back to their teacher, they should say, Courtney wasn't there. If they go to the nurse, and the nurse might be out to lunch. I mean, there's times where, you know, the nurse closes her office to eat her lunch. They have to be able to go back and tell their teacher, she wasn't there, I have to go back. So we've got to teach them to advocate, too, and check in with them. So we, I think on our end, we need to make sure that when kids go to the nurse, that there's a follow-up to make sure that they saw somebody from the teacher's end, to be able to say, on your way back in, how did that go? And if, and to make sure that we're helping them to advocate, too.
That was going to be my question. If the student goes to the nurse, what are the instructions? If she's not there, do you come? Are they supposed to come back or sit and wait? Because they don't have a walkie-talkie.
Right.
They can't.
Yeah, and there's usually a note on the nurse's door, I believe.
Yeah, I leave a note on my door that says, if I'm not here, please go to the main office. And at that point, the main office would either walkie me or call to the lower school nurse to find out. Perhaps there, you know, is a triage of some sort, questions, you know, what's the problem, you know, how to ascertain the, you know, the level of response time needed.
And again, our upper school kids are better able to do that, so closing the upper school office, like I said, made more sense when we really looked at it this year. So it's another place where we go, yeah, those kids can read that and are more likely to go and advocate for themselves or tell somebody, or... And their needs are different, too. Honestly, like, the younger guys can cycle through needing a Band-Aid every 10 minutes, but the upper school kids don't necessarily do it. They pride themselves on not going to the nurse, so the traffic is much less. So again, it was a place where we made a change. I think until then, you're right, that some of the concerns that you're hearing absolutely were leading up to that, but we responded and made a very clear change in our personnel to respond to that.
And then the monitoring piece, right, is the other component to this, right? So we're continuously monitoring through maybe feedback or finding a mechanism to continue to get feedback, right, from our teachers, from our families, from our students with respect to what they're seeing in real time as best as possible, if not a day, 2 days, within a week after. So it's a community effort is what I'm getting at, right, where we're bringing these types of incidences to people's attention, primarily, obviously, yourself as our head of school. And then if that constitutes a review outside of the regular cycle review, then I think we should take that measure as well.
Yeah, and that's what we did. That's why February, March we met, is that we were hearing some frustration and said, let's figure out a new plan then. And we immediately shifted gears. It is, you're right, it's a community effort. It's one that does not have great, you know, there's not a standard on how to do this. There are some non-negotiables around eating lunch in the classroom that we have to, abide by, especially around, you know, serving kids and processing payments and things like that are non-negotiables. But we don't have a one-point person that kids come and get their lunch from. There's no cafeteria. There's no... it functions in a very different capacity. And the only way we've kind of managed that is to have different people take on different hats of that. I don't know that... And I think it's something that we continue to talk about. We talked about this yesterday in our meeting, figuring out if there's a place for a different support person in this. We're happy to consider hiring another person to do something here, right? Like, trying to figure it out. And there's not, it's funny because different pieces have to happen in different places, that it's not as clear cut as that as we've looked at that. To kind of wrap up what the day looks like, the cleanup happens all in the classrooms with the teachers and the students. So again, there's nobody that does that besides teachers and students after lunch. The para-volunteers will prep breakfast for the next day, so they actually portion out breakfast and put it in the fridge, and then the teachers can grab that in the morning, so they do that as well. They collect the bags and bins, and then the lower school nurse goes into the meal processing system and closes out the day that everybody, all the teachers, have entered their lunch counts for the day. In order for the children to get charged, we have to close out the day. That's kind of what the overall, on a daily basis, looks like, as well as kind of the big picture. And so I wanted to kind of give that data for you to see, and then certainly we can answer any questions. Any of us would be happy to do so as we kind of keep,
How many parent volunteers do we have staffing this, and what is recruitment like, and what is their commitment period?
Mm-hmm. You want to speak to that?
Sure. So we started the year with 3 full-time every day, with a list of about 50 substitutes, and I'd say mostly it's those primary people who ended up maybe shuffling shifts once in a while. There wasn't a lot of support, unfortunately, from
people not on that list. But we ended the year with at least 2 full-time people every day. There were still 3 and several on several days. Generally people work for the whole year. Some people shift alternated weeks, so they would do every other Friday, say, throughout the year, and that was really just set up on an as-needed basis. Recruitment is not easy, and I think it, it'd be great to have more options like that for once a month or once every other week or something, and maybe get a few more people in here to lessen the commitment for others. But so far, so good. I think we've staffed it for 4 years, and it's running.
So other than when a substitute person comes in, you're relying on the same 2 or 3 people to do this all year long?
I come one day a week, so it's different for each day of the week. So we have Monday people and Tuesday people.
Oh, okay.
How long are you here when you're here about?
About an hour and a half.
So you have 2 or 3 people one day per week for the year?
Yes. And again, sometimes those shift. There's been, I work full-time from home, so there's times when I have a meeting at noon and have to leave, and maybe I'll come 10 minutes early and my other person will stay, a little bit late. So there is some flexibility, too, in the timing.
And everybody knows I'm in the workroom, and then they know they can come get me in the workroom, and then I'll clean everything up at the end of the day.
And what is that issue? Is that the carts and bins are not getting returned to where they came from?
So that came up in our reflection meeting yesterday, is that it's another step for the parent volunteers to go and collect them. So we actually brainstormed some ideas around that yesterday and are going to make it so some teachers have bus duty at the end of the day, some teachers have walker duty at the end of the day. We're actually going to have somebody whose duty is to collect the bins and make sure that they're returned at the end of the day. So we're going to address that piece. I think what's interesting is that Corey and Liz, our partner, have been doing it since we started. I tend to think you like it.
Yeah, I think
I think people that do it enjoy it.
Gives me a reason to check in every week here. And I think a lot of people feel that way, but it is a big commitment.
And if we find the right people, I think it seems to be.
Recruitment with any volunteer effort can be difficult.
Yeah. And I just have 2 questions follow up and for Corey.
I think in the interest of time, unless there's anything else, we'll go with these 2. This will probably be our last 2, and then we'll move to the rest of our agenda.
And also, for one, training for the volunteers, so bringing new volunteers and with the subs, is there training and kind of who does that for them going into the meal prep room and ensuring, because they are dealing with some special foods and allergies, what type of training do these volunteers receive? And has there ever been to the volunteers some type of assessment to see how they feel? Like, do you receive feedback that's put down that you can look at and help assess in order to make changes and such like that?
Okay. For the feedback, I know there was a survey out for the last month of the school year. I'm not sure where that data went. I haven't seen that. But there was a survey out in the lunchroom for volunteers to complete.
Okay.
I remember your other question now. Oh, training. So I was there along with other people who have done it for years, every day for the first 2-3 weeks, making sure that everyone that was starting was operating, as close to the same way as possible. I think that's another area where we could have a little more refined. I think this year was better than any other year as far as consistency. But that's something that maybe we should do a few times during the year, just to make sure that, as things change, that everyone's on the same page.
Yeah, so one of the other refinements that we have planned for next year is that this year our upper school nurse went over for about 30 minutes and checked in the lunches. Feedback from Becky was that it would actually make sense for the person to be there for about 1 hour and overlap with the parent volunteers that are coming in so that that they could check in with them and communicate anything that's going on. So the feedback from Becky was that 1 hour would actually make better sense, and wouldn't impact what she's doing on that side as well. We actually also, on top of that, scheduled a check-in meeting for November because we said, let's try that and see what that looks like, and then let's check in. I said earlier, but they all reminded me that September is crazy in terms of food services for us. So just as you're learning new processes and new people. So we've pushed it to November to do a check-in to say, all right, does an hour, is that tightening up some of our procedures that's making this more manageable for our volunteers, right? To have a point person there, to have somebody to be able to answer the questions, does that help make this a little bit more effective? So again, trying to figure out ways to make it work better for everybody and utilizing the feedback of the people that do it and do those parts to really help us. and taking feedback from, as you know, I think we heard a lot of suggestions and questions tonight that I want to go back and think about and really process in terms of our processes to see if there's other areas that we didn't think of that we can tighten as well.
Excellent.
I know we're moving on, but just a couple questions, not necessarily follow-up, but they're food service related. Can you tell us really briefly what the breakfast program is and also what the food bank backpack program is? And is it designed to feed the whole family or just the child over the weekend?
I don't know that answer. I got to check on that one. I think it's just the child, right?
The backpack is just for the child.
Thank you. And breakfast is same. It's delivered from our food service provider. It's not a hot breakfast. We don't serve hot breakfast. We only serve cold breakfast. So it can be delivered the day before, and we can hand them out the next morning. So
and you said you put them in the refrigerator, and the teachers go get them?
Yep.
Is this down in the food?
Yep, so in the food prep room, the volunteers of lunch that day will prep the breakfast for the next day, and they will create a bin that says, you know, room 12's breakfast, and that teacher grabs them in the morning as they're waiting to class.
Thank you.
And then serves them to children, and again, enters it right there. So they've got to be the person and the point of service as well immediately with that. So they have to be that person. Sorry, guys. They're all like, really? Do I have to be that person?
Yeah. Thank you.
Of course. Excellent.
Yep.
Courtney, thank you very much for the review and head of school report and multi-point head of school report. Thank you very much. As we move through the agenda, we have our... Let's be mindful of the time and that we also have, this is more so for our members here, be mindful of our time, we also have an executive session as well, complete, okay? So we'll move on to our board of directors' due diligence, and Tawny Gilmore is our secretary as a point of couple points of information.
Just real quick, especially for new board members, please remember that your background checks need to be completed. Once again, as you have completed those background checks, it will be sent to the school and the school will notify me so we can ensure that that is on file. Also, I will be sending out an email over the next week. We have the school board, board of directors matrix, which pretty lists our areas of strength, such as fundraising, communications, legal. This just kind of helps know where our various strengths lie as a board. Some of our former board members, you might have remembered doing this back in March, February timeframe. We do need to update it to include the new board members, and also just want to include the returning board members, just to, a little refresher if something has changed. Maybe you've gotten more experience in fundraising and want to kind of up the ante on that. We do need to get this completed because it does go to the head of school. So I will be sending that out via email probably next week for your review, and you can send it back to me via email also.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Charlie. Next bullet is a committee preferences discussion. Very quickly, most of you probably know already, I've reached out to you in some capacity, not only primarily focused, though, on new board members, just to make sure that we, as we begin to close out the existing calendar year and set up for a new calendar year around preferences there. So I've had conferences with pretty much everybody here already, for by and large, the most part. If not directly, I've definitely reached out. And so we'll make sure there's only a few left. I want to make sure we close that loop before we get into the back end of the summer, and definitely before we get into the school year. So you'll be seeing some more information from me coming on that. To that point, I think to our existing board members, right, you'll also be hearing from me secondarily once I close out our new ones, just to make sure that we're all still utilizing our time, talent, and treasure in the most efficient way, and in a way that we desire as well. Right? So that's very important as we look forward to our new school year. So just a brief note around that.
All right.
Head of school.
Yeah. So they asked me to provide a renovation update. And my limited camera skills are. I needed a realtor to come in. I should have called Megan. I needed a realtor to come in and do this like really cool staged photos. So instead, I put my phone on video and walked upstairs today, in the midst of everything. So you're going to see people working. I promised them I wouldn't put the sound on it. As I walked around, they were like, "Can you hear us?" I was like, "No, I won't put the sound on." But I literally just kind of viewed, once I stepped off the elevator and walked down the hall, and I figured it would give you the best insight of what that looks like.
And so, just for some context, right, Courtney, this is our third floor of the building across the street, is that correct?
Yes.
And obviously major renovations. So when you've seen, most of you have probably received a letter or two around our capital campaign and the fundraising that we've been doing, on particularly, really all throughout the year, but particularly in the back end of the year. So Courtney was kind enough to take this walkthrough and give us a visual.
I walk through it every day, my friend, but today I did it with
We'll provide one for us with some of the great work and progress that's been made on that floor this year, over the last year.
Often, and we've got to write down what we have to do.
Reset always works. Control over
Right.
It's a bit anticlimactic.
Sorry, guys.
So as Liz is pulling it up, one of the things that I will say as we talk about the renovation update is that we are still within all of our budget contingencies and spend so far. So there have been no overages that have occurred.
Schedule-wise, is it still okay?
Schedule-wise, we're actually ahead of schedule.
What?
I know, right?
Never.
So we are ahead of schedule. I think what will happen is that they'll be doing a lot of finishing work, but that can happen once we're up there, too. So they're... the floors and the walls and the ceilings are ready to go, which is great. That's the main part. They'll be, I think, still installing some things and some pieces like that as we go. But no, I think we're actually going to finish. I think we're actually going to be a little. We're going to be ready ahead of schedule.
Well, I can tell you, I've taken several tours, just so after meetings or what have you, upstairs, including the demolition phase, right, as well as just what 2 weeks ago, maybe a week ago, even there. I was amazed to see the level of progress, quite frankly, that has been made on that floor in such a short period of time. It's no small undertaking, but there are a lot of people up there working all day long, so that progress is happening at a cost. So I'm very happy to hear that that cost is still within the budgeted range that's been relayed to us by the general contractor.
And when I say ahead of schedule, so we are close to ahead of schedule, however, that's accounting for if when we go to do our CFO, anything else is required of us. So we are going for our CFO about 2 weeks before we anticipated being finished. However, that CFO will then lead to some other pieces and then being able to be actually done by the August 1st date.
And there's a contingency built around that as well, I would imagine.
Yes.
Thank you.
Courtney, did you tell us on the tour that as they... that they're checking the chiller units in the ceilings.
So on that floor, everything that links to that floor has been updated and checked.
Thank you.
Who's my tech person in the audience in the room, right?
Not me.
What am I missing?
Yeah.
Okay, so
and the third floor is going to house the 7th and 8th graders?
So the third floor houses the 4th, 5th, and 6th graders.
Oh, 4th, 5th, and 6th
graders. So there will be 2 4, 5, 6 classrooms on the first floor and 5 on the third floor, and our middle schoolers live in the middle. It just, by design, by the size of the spaces, because the gym hits the other spaces differently.
Okay.
It's the most amount of space, so we can put the most classrooms up there, and that will always be the biggest group.
Okay.
Because it has 3 grades in it, so it's a little bigger. All right, come on, Liz. Nothing? You got nothing for
nothing.
Me?
I got nothing.
Well, maybe.
Where's Sean?
Yeah, maybe.
Sean, you got something for me?
I don't know Max very well.
It's not Max. It's Windows.
Yeah, take your word for it.
Yeah. I got another touch person out
there. No pressure.
I know.
Let me see.
No pressure. Just 30 seconds.
Susan,
when
we need
our
tech teacher retired this year. She was actually coming
to
come tonight so we
could
appreciate her, but she's away.
Yeah,
no, sir.
No
luck?
Yeah.
My
gosh.
Jurassic Park just came in.
Well, we appreciate the fact that you're
things you want.
And hopefully at our next meeting we'll be able to circle back.
Sorry about that.
Right? No worries. It happens, right?
Okay.
I always say technology is greater than the worst stuff. So, we'll revisit our renovation update from our head of school in our great video. That is all the public business that we have on the agenda for today. As you see noted, we do have an executive session for our board here We have to partake in that. So with that said, I think I'd like to hear a motion that we move into the executive session from one of our board members.
So moved.
Thank you, Zeke. Allison, move. Can I have a second?
Second.
Thank you very much, Courtney. We appreciate Courtney locking in the second to move to executive session. I have 8:05. Secretary Gilmore? Excellent. So moved. Wonderful. Let's prepare for that. We'll give it a quick 30 seconds. And then circle back.